It's time now for KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30, bringing you interviews and information regarding local nonprofit events and city and county services from Aspen to Rifle. KMTS Connections connects you to everything that matters in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond. Once again, it's Gabe from the KMTS Morning Show, and the end of an era in, well, not just Glenwood, but the whole area. As Terry Wilson this year, earlier this year, announced a retirement in December and later on decided, well, you know, maybe it's just time to call it good, call it a career after 35 years. It's so interesting to say 35 years, and yet you and I have known each other almost all that time. When did we meet? Around 91, I think.
Probably somewhere right in there.
So interesting. As you know, Bob Halbert is kind of like a second father to me. And I remember when he retired, and still to this day, I can't help but think of him and not think chief.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I still would only call him that myself. To me, there were two, I guess, really dominant, important male figures in my life that I would only know by title. And one would be Bob Halbert will always be the chief.
Right.
And Don Miller, until and beyond his passing,
was coach.
I mean, that's just two people that their strength, their persona, their impact on all of us that grew up and worked with and played for them was such that it was a title. And it was them.
I see Don's son, JD, from time to time. I'll make sure and tell him that. I'm sure he'll appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I definitely understand what you mean. There are some people that personify the position so much that you can't think of them outside that context. Although Bob went on to drive a school bus later on, and I can definitely see him in that context, too.
Yeah,
the,
no,
the two
I
are
can
kind
see
of similar.
That, too. Yeah, yeah. No, and I hope to find something relatively interesting and non-related to law enforcement to pursue soon.
We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Let's start from the beginning. Your family has been here as long as mine has. I mean, four or five generations, right?
Yeah, back to great-grandpa owning a bakery in Aspen during the silver boom.
Wow, which was 1880s.
Somewhere right in there, yeah.
Okay. At that time, my family was around Woody Creek or that kind of thing, basalt area, homesteading, and later on they just continued moving down valley as time goes on. If I remember correctly, you were on the state championship football team back in 82?
No, oh, no. Okay. No, God, no. No, I was on a non-championship team.
Okay. Well, it's funny.
Graduated in 77. We made it as far as the state semifinals. And then fell on our swords in Yuma, Colorado, in the coldest football game in history.
Or at least it seems that way, right?
It certainly did.
Were you a multi-sport athlete? Did you play other sports?
Yeah. Especially my senior year. I guess you start to get nostalgic when it's coming to an end.
Right.
And so wrestled and track, and that was pretty much it. Wrestling,
which was your favorite?
Football.
Okay.
No doubt. That was a life passion.
Did you play after high school?
No, I didn't. Played around with the idea, but I had a knee injury a year after graduation, and that kind of set me back for a while. And
did you join the workforce immediately? Did you go to college?
I stopped in at CSU for a while. I majored in beer and pizza. And shortly after that, I did about a semester and a half, and then I came back to Glenwood. I went to work for first a lumber yard, Foster Lumber, which was over where Tequila's is. And
I don't even remember that.
Yeah, it's going back a long ways. And ran lumber and loads of building materials to all kinds of places up and down the valley. You know, making the stunning sum of $3.15 an hour.
Which was minimum wage at that
time.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Cruised along, did that, and then...
You were right next door to my grandpa, who worked for Revere's at that time, I think.
Well, Gardiner Sheetrock was right next door, where the old Toyota place now, the Hot Springs Pools parking area, they were in that space, and so I went to work over there for a while. And in the meantime, I did what so many of us did at that age and put in an application at one of the coal mines.
Sure.
And went up and tested and ended up getting hired at Thompson Creek and went to work up there for 5.5 years underground.
I remember, so one of the first times I met you, I remember riding around and we went to Taco Bell. I don't know if you remember this or not. Folks, I am not lying. I saw Terry eat a Taco Bell burrito in two bites. Two bites? I'm not joking. And you told me that when you're working for the coal mine, your supervisor would get you overtime if you guys would work through lunch or something like that. Is that right?
Yeah, and we became masters of getting mass quantities in a very, very compact time.
Because well, I am still
it
impressed.
It was worth it.
I am still impressed. Take my word for it.
It's a bad habit to this day. I still eat too quickly.
So what? Why did you decide to make the change?
Which one?
From
the mine?
Yeah.
Well, at that time, our mine, the Thompson Creek mine, had a massive layoff. We went from 450 employees to 50 overnight.
Wow.
At that point, even though I was really young and definitely not very bright, I thought there may not be a long-term future in this particular place. And so I began looking at what I was going to do, where I would go next. And obviously, I was looking at other mines. I was talking to friends of mine I knew that worked in Meeker area, Craig area, Debec, and looking at other coal mines to go to. At the time, I was playing music in a band with Rocky and Bency Burrows.
I forgot you're a drummer, right?
And Steve Turner. And yeah, we had quite the little bunch going. Yeah. And of course, Bency was a sergeant with the Glenwood PD. And as we were sitting one night during practice, we were talking about it. And I said, pretty sure I'm about to lose my job. I said, guys, I'm going to end up having to move and get a job at another coal mine. And he looked at me and said, hey, Wilson, why don't you put in an application with the police department? And I looked at him and said, man, I've spent too much time in the back seat. I'm pretty sure they don't want to give me a set of keys. And he looked at me and he said, well, you think I was an angel? Knowing Bency, I knew that wasn't possible. And I thought, well, heck, maybe I'll take a shot at it and put in an application.
And the rest, as they say.
Yeah, I tested, came in pretty close to dead last, but just qualified. I actually came out number one in most of the testing, and poor Chief Halbert was petrified at the thought of having to hire me, so he decided to move me to number five. And I waited for 11 and a half months on a 12-month waiting list, and they had ground through everyone that had been listed above me on the list. And
they washed out, basically.
Yeah. And lo and behold, I got a call from the chief, and he offered me the position as the dog catcher.
Wow. Was it called that at that time, or was it the ordnance officer?
I think it was ordnance officer, okay. But trust me, in the squad room, you were the dog catcher.
Gotcha. Sure. I understand.
Yes.
I have heard some rumors, speaking about the front versus the back seat, I've heard some rumors that maybe you were a bit of a rowdy child.
Well, let's just say that I never lacked for opportunities to amuse myself and that I owe a lot of my success as a young patrol officer to basically knowing everything that they would be doing because I had already done it.
Fair enough. Do you think that that is part of the culture of law enforcement that has changed? In other words, were you able to get away with more in the 70s, than you are now?
God, yes. Absolutely. And I think the whole mindset about it was different. One of the things I've seen change massively in the time of my career is the topic of personal accountability. It's something that, you know, back when I was a kid and even when you were a kid, there were a few things that...
Which, by the way, were not that far separated.
Not that far apart, but I mean, there were a few things that petrified you, and one of which was upsetting an adult to the point where they said, go to the principal's office, or I'm calling your parents, or anything of that nature, because there was definitely a different sense of teamwork and that they would be on the same page. And that meant that a certain part of your anatomy was probably going to get warmed up really good and other punishments could be invoked. And, you know, there were things a lot scarier than the cops talking to you. It was about what was going to happen when you got home. And that was very different. Nowadays, my officers take endless grief from people, from parents, when they call them and they've had to deal with, write a ticket, arrest a young person for something. And the first thing an awful lot of parents tell our officers is, you're lying. They made this up. My child would never do this. We didn't hear those responses.
No.
What we heard is, boy, yeah. Get over here.
Yeah.
And then the real punishment began.
When you're dealing with, in our day, when you're dealing with parents, the whole innocent until proven guilty.
No.
Did not exist.
No. And it was, I missed that. I always like to tell my young officers that it's so different for them and that I did an awful lot of good law enforcement, not just me, but I mean the profession and certainly my peers when I started into patrol. We did a lot of good law enforcement with a good butt chewing on the side of the road. There was a lot to be done and could be done. I had some young folks that were in the full bloom of their teenage years when I got into a patrol car and I got to know them rather well. And all I ever had to do really was say, so would you like to come down to the office and we can call mom and dad and have them come down to pick you up? And the answer was always the same. No, sir, Officer Wilson. Thank you very much, Officer Wilson. We'll see you next weekend, sir. Have a great night. And they were gone. You don't get that response now.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I think it says, and it's certainly not just our town, our area, our business, or anything else. It's society in general. I mean, the age of accountability is over. They've passed special legislation so that juvenile offenses are almost immediately sealed records. They're expunged. We've gone a long ways towards trying to put in mechanisms so that people don't have to be accountable for their actions. And I don't know that that's a good direction. I know I don't like it.
Interesting. We'll continue the conversation with Chief Wilson, former Chief Wilson. How would you prefer to be Chief Wilson retired?
I'm just going to go with Terry.
All right. I guess that's what I've called you for the last 20 or almost 30 years or so. Might as well continue calling you that, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure what I'll be called as long as I get called for a tea time.
That's almost what my grandpa used to say. It was, call me in time for supper, but
there you go.
Wherever your priorities are, right?
Yes.
You're too busy eating quickly so you can get back out on the golf course.
That's it.
We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, this afternoon, we're visiting with Terry Wilson, Glenwood Springs Police Chief, for the last 24 or so years, plus a couple six-month temporary chief stints. We'll talk a little bit more about what the future may hold in just a bit, kind of moving forward through time. You know, it was around 83 that you were hired by then Chief Bob Halbert to be the ordnance officer, or the dog catcher, as you mentioned, as the other officers would call you, which brings to mind a few stories over the years, unfortunately none of which are appropriate for the air. I'm sure Boyd Hyatt would probably appreciate me not mentioning those either. At what point did you move into a patrol officer position?
Well, I was hired February 1st of 1984, and August of that year, there were a couple of officers that went from the police department over to the sheriff's department. And the reason they went over is that was during the oil shale starting to boom. Everyone thought it was going to be a big deal. And the sheriff's department grew from like a 10-person department to about a 35, 45-person department in a hurry. So they were sniping officers from all around the area. So those two openings, that were created when ours went over to be detectives at the sheriff's office created a patrol opening that I was offered the opportunity to lateral into from the code enforcement into patrol.
Okay. And I know that there are different levels of the patrolman classification. Did you have aspirations to be, to move forward through that process for reasons other than obviously just higher pay and to be a supervisor?
You know, I don't think anyone really starts off there. You toy around with the idea as you start to get some experience and start to understand the business and the job a little bit. But I think it takes a while to really become an aspiration or a goal. The business of being a police officer, and especially at the patrol level, especially when you're young and new at it, is so damn fun in and of itself. And it's so all-encompassing. And it just, you get completely absorbed into it. And you really don't think about the future or where you want to be in 10 years or anything else until you get a couple, 3 years under your belt and you start to, I guess, look around. Mm-hmm. And for that first couple, 3 years, all I wanted to do was get to my next shift and have someone hand me the keys. I just wanted to go out and do whatever I could, find whatever I could find, fix whatever I could fix, answer any calls that I could get on the radio. I mean, it was just so exciting to be out there that, yeah, it took a while before I started thinking about it.
Talk about changes in law enforcement. You, again, were hired with no college, I assume, in criminal justice or anything like that. Would you even consider an applicant like that in this day and age?
I would. And I think part of that is just that I don't believe it's the measure of the person by the paper that's hanging on the wall. And I don't think that having the paper hanging on the wall is necessarily, it's definitely nothing negative. It's just that to me, the job of being a police officer is a lot more about who the person is than what they have accomplished to that point in their life. It's about what they're standards are, what they want to accomplish, who they are as a person, their compassion level, their integrity levels, their so many things that can't be measured by a GPA, can't be measured by, you know, a lot of other standard things. And to me, that's always been the challenge in recruiting and testing and hiring, is finding that person that has the right balance of common sense, intelligence, honesty, energy, all those things that are kind of nebulous. It's really hard to put a number to them. And I don't think we're there yet. I don't think there's a good testing process out there that lets us measure a lot of those things.
Speaking of paper hanging on the wall, paperwork has changed over the years as well. Obviously, technology has changed somewhat the way you do things, but you do a lot more writing now than you did 35 years ago.
Absolutely. Officers are more bound to the computer now because the business end of our profession in keeping good records, having them all managed and attainable, having them preserved all in electronic format, able to transmit them and so forth, is so much more important than it ever was for us. I mean, ours was, you know, a sheet of green report pads and a number two pencil. And we did an awful lot of good work that way. But it's very, very different now.
Pen with black ink.
Yes.
Not blue. Black.
Black. To this day, I get a little queasy if I see a blue pen.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah. No, it's a little uncomfortable for me because, as you're saying, that was stressed rather significantly for us.
Yes, it was, as I recall. Did you ever consider you talk about the lateral moves to other agencies that other officers chose to accept? Did you ever consider working for somebody else? I know you went to the FBI Academy. I'm trying. The citizen portion of that is 6 months long. I don't know what the law enforcement version is. Or, I'm sorry, 6 weeks long. I don't know what the law enforcement version is.
Right at double. It's like 11, 12 weeks is what I was at there.
Okay.
There were 2 points in my career where I thought about going somewhere else. One was at the end of my first year in patrol. I mean, you're pretty much by the end of your first year, you reach a point between 1 and 3 years, you reach a point where you know that you're probably the most accomplished and intelligent human being that ever drove a patrol car, and that you have more answers than there are questions, and you really ought to be kind of in charge of the world because you're just that damn good.
This is kind of like being a freshman in high school.
It's a lot like that, yeah. Yes. You know, and so I kind of hit that point. And my father, my folks divorced real young, and he stayed in California. And he was with Los Angeles County Sheriff's Office for 29 years. He did 22 years as a homicide detective in L.A. County. So I got talking with him one night on the phone. We didn't have a relationship for many, many, many years. And then later, once I hit like my early 20s, we got to be really close. So I'm sitting there talking with him one night, and the draw of the big city, the excitement, the running and gunning, chasing bad guys endlessly and stuff was kind of spinning in my mind. And I knew I could catch them all, and they probably needed the help out there. So I got talking with him one night, and I said, "Is there any chance I could get hired on at your department?" And he laughed, and he said, "Well, the elected sheriff of Los Angeles County was my classmate in the police academy." He goes, "We're a 7,000-person department." He goes, "If I go knock on the door of Sherm, the sheriff, and ask him for a favor, you'll be working tomorrow." He then spent an hour on the phone talking me out of it and explained to me the differences, as he saw it, of working in a huge metropolitan area like that, and more importantly, living in an area like that. And he talked an awful lot about staying somewhere smaller to raise kids, to have your family. And he said, "Plus, you get to make a true difference and see the difference you make." He said, "You'll deal with people, you'll see them again." He goes, I arrest people, deal with them, and I never see anyone related to that again because there's 11 million people. And so he really talked me out of going out there and pursuing something in a different place. And to this day, I'd have to say he proved out to be a hell of a lot smarter about that than I was.
Funny how that happens with parents.
You know, you figure out once you become a parent that you figure out just how bright your parents really were.
Yeah, pretty much. Take one final break, come back and wrap things up with Terry in just a minute. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again this afternoon, talking with Terry Wilson, 35 years, calling it quits as a member of the Glenwood Springs Police Department. You showed up at the office today. You're driving your POV, your privately owned vehicle. No badge, no gun, just Terry. Actually, it looks like you are ready right now to go hit the golf course.
That won't be hard to talk me into either.
I wish I could play.
Any opportunity.
Have you always been interested in golf?
No. Unfortunately, a good friend of mine got me addicted, oh gosh, a long time ago now, but we were in our mid to late 20s, and he got me hooked at the old West Bank 9-hole course, and I've been trying to do it ever since, and I still stink.
That wouldn't be Trey by chance, would it?
No, he was part of the problem, but Steve Lundeen is the one that first got me going on it.
Okay. We'll blame him then.
Yeah.
To finish the thought from the previous segment, I forgot to ask, talking about young officers and trying to mold them so that they are a helpful part of your department. How many officers, by the way, currently at the Glenwood Police Department?
We're at about 25 sworn and have about 3 openings.
So about almost...
Not 28.
Almost 3 times as many as when you and I first met.
Yeah.
Back in the early 90s.
It's a bit bigger.
And you talked about your experience that first year, and by the end of the first year, just knowing that you had all the answers like, so many of us do, and so many... I think it's pretty universal,
Sure.
whether you're in school or in a job or something like that. State Trooper Sean O'Neill once told me about the life cycle of a law enforcement officer. And he said, when you first start, you are out there and you are writing tickets left and right. And you, as you say, are going to solve all the problems of the world. You mellow out for a little bit in the middle of your career. And then toward the end, you kind of become to get a little cynical and you start writing a lot of tickets again, but for different reasons. You feel like that's more or less accurate?
You know, a little bit, but I think my position's been a little different just because of the length of time I've had as a chief. Mm-hmm. And so the...
I guess it would be different if you were out on the road all that
definitely.
Time.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm not sure I would have had the patience the last 5 years to be on the road and deal with people the way my young officers do. They have an incredible...
I think you answered the question right there.
Yeah, they have an incredible reservoir of patience and professionalism. And, you know, they've kind of grown up as officers with the different era of customers that they have. And so I think that changes things a lot. For me, the last umpteen years has been about broader challenges. And I don't want to say bigger issues because everything we deal with is an important issue. But,
sure,
you know, challenges like the Grand Avenue Bridge, challenges like the current Sunlight Bridge project going on. And those things have become more my focus individually.
I have to say, I don't know if everyone would agree with this. I'm sure there are people that would disagree, and that's fine. I thought you handled that whole thing so well, not just as a department, but yourself. You know, I've always referred to your and your management style as an operational type manager. In other words, you're not just sitting in the office telling everybody else what to do. You're actually out there. I don't know if you ever actually were on patrol, but the fact that I frequently saw you direct, and I don't think you ever saw me because I did wave every time I drove by. But I imagine at a certain point, all the cars begin to look alike. But I always saw you directing traffic out, you know, when something major is going on. Number one, I know I'm probably going to get a call from you. Number two, I know you're going to be out there in the thick of it. Was that your way to kind of offset the time in the office, like from a mental health standpoint?
Absolutely. The best part of what we do will always be done face-to-face with people. I can sit and write policies and shuffle paperwork and do stuff on the computer and write budgets and stuff as a chief of police till the cows come home. But the best part of the job is always going out and trying to help deal with an issue, whatever it may be. At its core, law enforcement is supposed to be about helping people deal with something that they don't want to deal with or don't know how to deal with it, don't know what resources are out there, don't have the answers to a question that they've never encountered before. That's what we're supposed to do, is help people. And we oftentimes say, gee, that's like the oldest answer in the book when you're hiring someone. And it's the right answer. It's what we're supposed to live for, is to ride in on the white horse with the big white hat and save the day. I mean, it's what you live for. It has to fill a need in your soul that's what you want to do. And it's really hard to get that feeling in an office.
Let's not forget the siren screaming and the lights ablazing.
Okay, that's still a little fun.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, no, that's still a little fun. Recently bringing some girders in for the Sunlight Bridge, we got to do a massive escort and bring them all through, and I took a couple of the folks related to the construction project with me, and we got to do the lights and sirens and zip and zoom and everything, and they were both kind of big-eyed and going, wow, that was really fun. Like, I thought, yeah, you know, after 35 years, it was still fun.
That's awesome. Like leapfrogging through town, right through the intersection. I wish I could have been there to see
still
that.
Still good, clean fun.
It's good to hear that there are some things that are universal and timeless.
Absolutely.
Of course, I absolutely respect what you said, that every call for service is important, and they're all, you know, I'm sure you probably see where I'm going with this. Is there one that sticks out in your mind as a, yeah, we did a good job on that one? Maybe not even personally, but as a department.
Man, there's so many. I'd have to sit down and really dredge through, but one of them that comes out to mind immediately was a shooting years and years ago out at the old Ponderosa Cabins in West Glenwood. And when I got the call that night that there had been a shooting and that we had had a homicide and arrived at the scene, when I stood out there, got out of my car, stood there with the detective sergeant and the duty sergeant, and they started recounting how the call came out, what they had done, what they were preparing to do, what they saw as next steps, I just kind of stood back in awe, and I said, my God, they're good. I needed to add nothing. I needed to grace them with zero experience and knowledge. All I had to do was sit back and watch my team handle a very complex, extremely serious call, and the amazing efficiency and professionalism that they had done that with before I could even get my dead butt out of bed was amazing. And it's times like that that you feel your greatest sense of pride, is that when you're the most tenured person, most experienced person, and they don't need you to do it. That's a thing of beauty.
Conversely, is there a case that sticks in your mind? And I suspect I might know where this would go, but
we're pretty close to the area sitting here in your studio right now. And the homicide at Walmart will always be my biggest regret.
Not for lack of trying.
No, the trying was outstanding. The response was outstanding. And it was just an extremely difficult set of circumstances. And we didn't get that one. That will always bother me.
Now, again, you have not made an arrest, so I'm not going to ask you to go into detail about that, because there's always a possibility that that may be resolved at some point in the future.
Yeah, and I'll still live with hope on that, and I'll be celebrating harder than anyone when it happens.
Fair enough. So what now? You told me earlier that your wife still has a couple years left to work, which leaves you some time to do whatever you would choose. You mentioned, and I'm not surprised, that there have been many, many offers. I'm sure you could name your price to be a consultant for just about anybody at this point. So do you have any thoughts?
Well, if you remember that conversation about how smart our parents are, when my father retired, and he and my stepmother, who, by the way, was a sheriff with the L.A. County Sheriff's Office, they moved to a small town in northern Nevada. And he went down to the local casino, hotel, gas station, RV park. It was a one facility suits all. And he put in an application because he said, I need some part-time work. So he put in an application, and they looked at his resume, which consisted of 29 years catching murderers. And they said, oh, we want you in our casino security. And he said, nope. He said, I'm ready to deal with smiling people and do something totally unrelated. And I'm going to follow his lead on that.
Well, one of your sergeants, Scott Robertson, 2 years ago left to go work at a gas station for the summer in Yellowstone National Park. So maybe see you in a position like that. Rich Duran from State Patrol, well, and Carol Davis, quite possibly the sweetest woman I have ever known, are both working the valet at Valley View Hospital now. Maybe join their ranks?
Never know. I've got
aren't as many lights and sirens, but you do get to drive other people's cars.
Yeah. No, I've got a few options there. I'm going to, you know, have a little time away, and then I'll have to do something, because otherwise I'd just get bored. And my wife said that's not an option. Being bored and pestering her endlessly is not going to work for either one of us. So,
well, and my experience is, you can infer from this what you will, when you're retired, you don't have the same concept of the timeline and the responsibilities that someone who still has a full-time job has.
Absolutely.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, I have a good handler. She will keep me on task, and I will have plenty of opportunity to fill my time.
I see a lot of YouTube videos now with the world of electronics. I'm sure you've seen them, too. You know, that this actually goes back to Southern California and Rodney King and then Reginald Denny. You know, that's kind of where this all started. But where I'm not going that angle. What I'm going with is, does your attitude in an interaction with a police officer play a part in the end result? And I understand the law is the law, and there are some things you've got leeway on and some things that you don't. But generally speaking, does your attitude with a police officer play a role?
I think it can when it's something, if you will, that's relatively minor. If it's something, certainly at a felony level, and the more serious the crime or the offense gets, the less discretion or flexibility an officer has with their decision making.
Right.
But it kind of goes back to, you know, me catching those kids maybe having a beer at Sayre Park at 1 o'clock in the morning. Attitude can have an awful lot to do with whether you get a simple ticket or not, or, you know, what the outcome is. And I don't think that that's anything that's necessarily specific to just interactions with police officers, but interactions with people. I mean, we've all had good and bad interactions with people. If you've ever been to a restaurant and you're really looking forward to your dinner and you catch that waiter or waitress on a really bad night and they're just a bit of a curmudgeon with it, it puts a damper on your whole evening. Damn sure affects how much of a tip gets left on the table. So I think it's about human interaction in general, and we want officers to have discretion, and more of it has been legislated away. But I've always said that, you know, an honest person making an honest mistake is something I can relate to really well. But someone that has made a mistake and wants to try and spin it back around and blow up about it into my face is probably not going to get an awfully good listen.
Any advice for the next chief?
Coming into the greatest place I can think of to do what we do. This town has been home for an awful long time for a lot of us. We're kind of in a weird circumstance as a community. I think right now we don't know whether we want to be a big town or a small town. And I think there's a little bit of an identity crisis going on within us that way. And it's a very challenging time because of that. But this is the most supportive community I can think of to do what I have done. And make sure and respect that, whoever comes in, and earn that, because they'll stand behind you and they'll give you all the support and all the space that you could possibly ask for. As long as you earn it and you're straightforward with them, be good to your word.
All right. Well, in closing, so when we were going to talk in November, December, I was thinking I could get some people together. I could play some sound clips, you know, some recordings. I didn't have time to do that, but I did text someone and ask them if they have any words of encouragement for you and any thoughts on your career. And I'm not going to tell you who it is. Let me just read the text and see if you can figure it out. Tell him that I'm proud of him and the job he's done, and I wish he and his wife a long and happy retirement.
That sounds like the chief.
That is absolutely the chief. Terry, it's been a pleasure. I'll see you in the gym, maybe.
Could be.
Maybe out the lake. Maybe eventually at some point out on the golf course.
God, don't do it.
I'll tell you my golf story after we're done. All the best. Thanks again for everything. You've always been treated us honorably over the years. Me personally, at a time when I was not the most popular person in the world, you always treated me with respect. I will always remember that and always appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
Take care.
Absolutely.
You've been listening to KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30. It's another reason we are the most listened to radio station from Rifle to Aspen.